So you want to know what a priest does and experiences? Just listen. This is part 10, and I've broken it up into two parts, so we will call it part 10 and part 11. The subject today again coincides with the year of the priest, and we portray another priest, Father Rollins Lambert. You might call this an African-American's priest journey through the priesthood. I've taken this story from the book, The Last Priest in America, Conversations with Remarkable Men, that was written by Tim Unsworth. I might add that Father Rollins Lambert was one of my best, if not my best friend ever, and he passed away this year, and I had his memorial mass. Who was he, and what was his journey through the priesthood? Well, it is as follows. When I was a kid at Sane High School in Chicago, I was urged to go to the University of Chicago. I used to go to the U of C on weekends to do research. I loved Henrietta Hoffman, a favorite teacher at Sen for a lot of us. I learned how to do research. It was a great introduction to art. I was able to put on a slideshow on the art of a period. I used slides from the library. I was about 2 years ahead of schedule in school. I entered the University of Chicago in 1938 at 16 and graduated at 20 with a degree in political science. I was pretty good at languages. I was thinking of foreign language service. At the time of my entrance to UC, I was a non-practicing Christian Scientist. I had gone to Sunday school until college, but in those days, the Christian Scientist required that you pass an exam for membership. Well, during the exam, I was asked if I thought the work of Mary Baker Eddy could be improved upon. I thought that the Bible was the only book that couldn't be improved upon, so I said that Mary Baker Eddy's writings could be clearer. So I flunked, and they recommended that I study more and come back. I didn't go back. When I got to the University of Chicago, I found a part-time job in the office I shared with a guy who was a Catholic. He knew I was interested in music, and he invited me to Holy Name Cathedral for the Easter liturgy. Stritch, that is Cardinal Stritch, didn't have an orchestra, but the music was good, and I discovered that the liturgy was in Latin. I had done 4 years in high school, and my scholarship at UC was based on how well I had done in Latin on the scholarship exam. I found a St. Andrew's Daily Missal in the library and took it out on permanent loan and started to go to Mass occasionally. Then I met Jerome Caron, an advisor to some of the Catholic students. I began hanging around the Calvert Club, a Catholic club at the university. The cardinal wouldn't allow a Newman club there, so this club was founded by Catholic laypeople. I talked especially to one girl. We often went to Calvert events together. I met George Dunn, a Jesuit who was a graduate student in international relations and who did chaplain stuff with us. I started going to Childerly House, an old mansion in the country that was used by the Calvert Club. There I ran into Joanna Doniet, an old teacher at Sen High School. She had taught me art and stagecraft, and I had done yard work for her family. I began going to Mass regularly and praying the Divine Office. One year I was reading Matthew 16:18. You are Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of the netherworld will not prevail against it. And it struck me that the church I studied since high school was the Catholic Church. Jerome and Joanna asked me if I wanted to take instructions, and when I said I did, they arranged for me to go to the Dominican House of Studies in River Forest. Later that year, Stritch appointed Joe Cummerton as the first official chaplain to what is now Calvert House. I had already pretty much decided to become a priest, but the guys in the Calvert Club didn't know the difference between a religious priest and a diocesan priest, and I sure didn't. Sarah Benedicta O'Neill was very important in my conversion. She ran the St. Bennet bookstore and loved converts. I was her special catch. Later, there was Dan Cantwell, Monsignor Daniel A. Cantwell, and Nina Polizin, now Nina Polizin Moore. We had tea at Sarah's shop every Saturday afternoon. We met visiting abbots, and I got interested in the Benedictine life. It was contrary to the Dominican spirit at the University of Chicago. I even visited Portsmouth Priory in Rhode Island, where I was encouraged to enter. It was the full monastic life. We praise God 7 or 8 times a day. I knew that I couldn't join. I had my mother, who was independent, but there were just two of us. She was involved in my life all these years. She died only last year at the age of 102. She never became a Catholic, but she learned to tolerate us. During those years before my conversion, she thought I was being deceived or duped. When I entered the seminary, she was shocked by the awful visiting rules. We had no car. She could only take the train up and then hope to get a ride home. After a year, she decided it would be better to go away. She went to California and was there many years. I thought of changing to a California diocese, but I listened to Dan Cantwell speak on urban life, and I decided to stay. I was baptized on Christmas Eve, 1941, and received my first communion from Cardinal Stritch at midnight mass. Soon after, I told Jerome Kerwin that I wanted to go to the seminary. He told me that I didn't have a chance. He knew of a black guy just before me who had a PhD and had been rejected. There was a very snobbish attitude towards the seminary at that time. The church had priests to spare, and I was black. I learned that another black had applied in 1940 or 1941. He was rejected. I don't know what they told him, but the real problem was race. Kerwin was a friend of the then Archbishop of St. Paul and of the rector of their seminary. I was accepted there, but I wanted Chicago. The acceptance to St. Paul gave me courage. I figured I'd apply and let my own diocese throw me out. I met Rennie Hillenbrand, Monsignor Reynold Hillenbrand, rector of St. Mary of the Lake Seminary. He took the matter to Stritch, and Stritch said that if it was okay with Joe Connerton, it was okay with him. I entered Mundelein in the fall of 1942, the first black in the seminary. There was no overt prejudice. I never felt it. Oh, one day while we were working on the grounds, some of the guys were goofing off and the groundskeeper was trying to urge us on. I was working just a little ahead of the pack when I heard him shout out, "Look at Rollins, you guys. He's working like a nigger." There was just silence. No one said a thing, neither did I. The man obviously felt terrible. It turned out great for me. For the rest of my time in the seminary, he couldn't do enough for me. My Latin was good as or better than the other seminarians, but I had no Greek. Hillenbrand arranged for me to have a tutor. I had some difficulty with philosophy, just understanding the philosophy professors. Hillenbrand was very kind to me. I was his protege. He let me skip classes I had already taken in college, and he put me to work as one of his secretaries. We got to be good friends and remained so until Vatican II. Rennie just couldn't fit into the post-Vatican II church. The church just passed him by. He had a hell of a time with young associates. Just couldn't work with them. Eventually, he had to use expatriate priest. I had no contact with him in his later years, and that was sad. Anyway, Rennie Hillenbrand was removed from office after I was in the seminary for only 2 years. Mel Foley took over and everything changed. The next 5 years were tough ones for me. Mel was suspicious of me for having skipped some courses. He had no faith in my secular education. He was suspicious of converts and maybe concerned that I was black. I don't know. He made me do the whole curriculum. I was at St. Mary's for 7 years, even though I already had my degree and the normal term for a college graduate was 4 years. Mel would have liked to see me go, but I was a good student who kept the rules, and I was good at Gregorian chant. He couldn't find a reason to boot me out. Priests before and after ordination do not seem to have had any difficulty accepting me. There might have been a few, but very few. I've heard stories of other black priests being refused permission to say Mass, especially when they traveled, but it never happened to me. I was ordained in 1949 and was appointed to a black parish, St. Malachy's, on West Washington. Stritch saw me as an experiment, his first black priest. He asked often about me. I was unique. I guess Jim Like, OFM, now Archbishop of Atlanta, who, by the way, has passed away, heard about me. He didn't believe that there was a black priest in Chicago. He made a trip to St. Malachy's just to meet me. But the people accepted me with open arms. It was a good first assignment. The parish had a little high school then. It was all black, and I had a chance to teach a class in black history. A real renovation in 1949. Just across the street was another school run by the same nuns. It was all white. They never did take a black student. Black parents tried to get their kids in, but they were never accepted. And let's leave this as part number one, and we will come back to this same story as part number two.